This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ben Reed, Shakespeare, he's overrated. Shakespeare is way outdated. Shakespeare must be translated. Shakespeare makes me sedated. Shakespeare, you know I hate it. All his books should be razor-bladed.
Good afternoon. You are listening to The Bigger Picture. This is Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. That song you just heard might suggest that we're anti-intellectual, anti-Shakespeare, that perhaps we're even Philistines. But we're not. We even know what that word means. A festival to refresh Shakespeare has been organized by the English Department, University Malaya, and it's given us the occasion to look into Shakespeare's place in our Malaysian education system. With me today, alongside Lim Soon Heng, of course, are Dr. Shamini Gabriel, the head of the department, and Dr. Kok Soo Mei, a senior lecturer from the same Department of English over at UM. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much
for having us.
Firstly, that song, offended, not offended, okay, agree, disagree?
Amused, very amused.
Where at the moment does Shakespeare sit in our Malaysian education and curriculum? You know, especially at the tertiary level.
Well, it's a good choice of word, actually, sit, because then I'm prompted to say he sits very uneasily in our Malaysian education system. In fact, I think he's been given a marginal place, what I would call a non-space in the Malaysian education system.
I think in terms of tertiary education, you have a few specialist courses. So students who are taking TESOL, for example, might have one or two compulsory courses on Shakespeare. If you're studying for a degree in English literature, of course you have to do some Shakespeare, but everyone else can, you know, just graduate quite happily without ever having to read any Shakespeare at all.
Very interesting that for TESOL teachers, they have to study Shakespeare. Why is that?
I don't know, to be honest. I had assumed initially it was because the English teachers are expected to teach Shakespeare at school, but that's not true. It used to be true, but now, unless students decide to take the English literature paper, they don't have to be exposed to Shakespeare either. So I suspect it's just this sense that maybe Shakespeare is important, although we're not quite sure what to do with him and why he's important, but we'll just make our teachers do some Shakespeare anyway, just in case, you know, we bring him back.
Yeah, but I would like to just say, but this has not always been the case with us, because if you think about it, Shakespeare has been performed and has been produced. Productions of Shakespeare's plays have been produced by schools, actually in schools before they were produced in universities. In University of Malaya, my university being the oldest university. Before that, even the Anglo-Chinese school in Ipoh, the ACS, the Sultan Idris Teachers Training College, they were schools that actually brought out productions of Shakespeare as far back as the early 1920s. And what's interesting is that it was a group of Malay students who brought out these productions in the Sultan Idris Training College. It was Shakespeare in Malay, right? So you had the dalang on stage, you had the women wearing sarongs, you had silat being performed, because those were the early attempts to indigenize Shakespeare, to Malaysianize him, to speak to our local experiences. So what has happened is that has stopped.
Why?
There has been a great disruption in our history.
Why?
Because of the policies that were put in place post-1969, especially with the natural cultural policy of 1971.
And where... Okay, so I think perhaps, you know, I'm not preaching to the choir, but I'm asking the choir to preach back to me, because where should he sit then? I mean, if you would say he occupies a non-space, what is the space that he should occupy?
Well, he should occupy an important space, actually, which he is not at the moment occupying, right? He should have been allowed to grow naturally, as he would have been if he was allowed to be rooted in our traditions, because there were already attempts to make him speak for local experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a difficult question to answer in the sense that we've had so many years without Shakespeare that at this point it'd be hard to see where he fits in. I mean, I'm all for Shakespeare, but I can understand how, you know, many students would struggle to understand Shakespeare. So, I mean, much as I love Shakespeare, I can't say, well, just flood the schools with Shakespeare and, you know, the poor kids are going to suffer. So it is quite a difficult question in that sense. I would guess that you need some Shakespeare, but it has to be taught in a way that students can enjoy. And actually be able to appreciate what Shakespeare is about rather than just having to endure this thing because, you know, some people say that Shakespeare needs to be taught in schools.
Some people would kind of point to the universality of the stories, I guess. You know, everyone falls in love at some point. Everyone gets a heartbroken. I don't know if everyone has had sword fights, but you know that there are some human emotions that are shared in the plays that are quite visceral in that sense. But what I'm hearing seems to be that there is a need to localize not just those experiences, but the story. You know, is it important to be able to ground the stories of Shakespeare in a Malaysian context instead of just the emotions as such? I mean, we'll get to language later.
I don't know. I mean, we might have different opinions on this. I tend to think that, no, it's not completely necessary. I teach Hamlet to my class very often, and I tell them that, you know, Hamlet is a very unique character. You know, how many of us are princes in Denmark with, you know, dead fathers and mothers who have remarried? But the play speaks about issues of life and death. It's about losing a father, and everyone at some point is going to lose someone who is dear to you. And so I do find that students can connect to the themes and connect in a very deep emotional way, even if it's set in such an alien atmosphere.
Yes, I would agree with that too. I think Shakespeare spoke about, you know, allowed us to enter and access a wide spectrum of human experiences. And we could love and loathe the same character, you know, at once, because such was his mastery of the language. He made it work for him. The double entendres, the allusions, the bringing together of abstract personifications made us enter the intricacies, the nooks and crannies of language in a way that allowed us actually to access the complexities of the human mind and human experience. So, yes, that I think is the unique and peculiar joy of reading Shakespeare.
So if you were to, you know, you mentioned that, you know, Shakespeare has been not exactly marginalized, but same, which kind of like ignored. So to that point, he has no real space in our educational system. As people from the English department, and Dr. Chamani, you are the head of the English department, what would you do with Shakespeare, given a carte blanche?
Well, I'm not saying that we should throw students at the deep end of the Shakespearean end of the pool, as it were. But I'm saying that we need a change of mindset. We need a change of in our ways of thinking and feeling about Shakespeare. As long as we see Shakespeare as an alien person, as a figure from our colonial past and our colonial history, as a relic, as a colonial relic, we are not going to be able to take him and make him into the figure we want, the local figure that we want him to be. There has to be a change in our national policies. There has to be a change in policies of education and policies of culture. Their teachers have to be equipped. They have to be given the resources, the skills to teach English. So I'm talking about a fundamental mindset, change of mindset.
Now, this might be a controversial question considering the room, but, you know, we talked about Hamlet earlier, and Hamlet is, I think most people would think, a great, you know, it's very simple that way. But broadly speaking, is Shakespeare overrated? I mean, have we placed him on a pedestal and now we're unwilling to remove him?
Surprisingly, I'm going to say that maybe yes, we have. And surprising because, I mean, I teach Shakespeare. I think he's overrated in the sense that we do attribute to him some things which he doesn't deserve. For example, I've heard people talk about how, oh, you know, Shakespeare invented, you know, maybe a third of the words in the English language. And that's not true. The reason we have that idea is because the Oxford English Dictionary, which we consider to be authoritative, that draws very much from Samuel Johnson's dictionary. Now, Johnson's an 18th century writer who read a lot of Shakespeare. And so when he was compiling the English dictionary, he gave his first examples of the word occurring as coming from Shakespeare. These days, with electronic databases, we are able to search through documents and we realize that a lot of the words were already in use then. They've been used for hundreds of years before Shakespeare even got to them. So in that sense, yes, he is overrated. We're giving him credit for some things which he did not do. But looking at his works, are they overrated? I don't think so. They are good works. And they
In fact, most of us, when we talk about Shakespeare, I suspect, except for the academics who are going to look into his life and what he has done, most of us just look at his plays and his works. So from that perspective, I think some would say, yeah, he's not overrated. But I will also argue that there are a lot of people who say, yeah, with the exception of the tragedies and some comedies, the rest are like, you know, okay, they're passable.
But let me say that personally, I dislike the idea of rating people because that is the kind of evaluative scale that the colonial masters used. They measured, they evaluated, they ranked, and they rated everything. You know, the span of the forehead, the bridge of the nose, how deep your eye sockets were. You know, so it is, to me, it is not to say that because we value Shakespeare, we are, you know, devaluing others. You know, it is important for us to realize that even the idea of rating is linked to the notion of literary excellence. We do not teach Shakespeare because we in the Department of English, certainly at the University of Blair, do not teach Shakespeare because we think, oh, we believe in the excellence of his works. We teach Shakespeare because we want to have, we want to understand literary history of his period. We want to understand the forms that he wrote. You know, we want to understand the gender politics of the time. You must realize that he was living at a time when the Queen Elizabeth I's power was waning. What was the attitude? Well, people were apprehensive about having a female monarch again. You know, women themselves were not to go up on stage and act, though he had roles for women. So we are interested in the gender politics. What were the range of cultural experiences that he covered? What were the representations that he that his plays, that his poetry allowed? So the idea of, we never teach poets, you know. In fact, if you want to understand Elizabethan history or Renaissance literature, we have not only Shakespeare, we have Sidney, we have, who else do we have? We have Ben Jonson, we have Marlowe. We teach all these great dramatists as well.
So it's not a question of quality, but a question of historicity.
Yes, it is a question of that. Obviously, we want good works. Right? But I do not think that we teach Shakespeare because we rate him very highly. Because we, his writing, the depth and quality of his writings allow us to understand his time and that period in British history.
We're speaking today with Professor Dr. Shamini Gabriel, head of the Department of English over at University Malaya, and Dr. Koksume, senior lecturer from the same department. We're discussing the relevance of Shakespeare studies today. Up next, we find out how that relevance can be reinforced here in the tropics, in our country. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Shakespeare's topics, whether they were love, deceit, avarice, a desire for power, they're still relevant today. In his works, he's shown man at his finest, man at his weakest, man at his worst. Women too, but mostly men.
Why do you think Shakespeare is still so resonant to us today? Why is he still important?
Because he has a way of saying things that has never been bettered. He's got a way of getting to the nub of what it is to be a human being. And he says it better than anyone has done since, I think.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me is Lim Soon Heng. And together we're talking with Professor Dr. Shamini Gabriel and Dr. Koksume, Head of Department of English and Senior Lecturer, respectively, at University Malaya. And we're talking about the relevance of Shakespeare studies today. And so we've had strong arguments in favor of Shakespeare's relevance. What is the process by which we've now kind of come to this point where Shakespeare is thought of as this sort of grand, high, inaccessible thing? You know, why have we reached this point that Shakespeare is almost shorthand for something that is very important but you didn't read?
An elitist.
Yeah, in a sense.
Right. Well, I think I trace it very much back to the 19th century. That's where you have the Romantics and the Victorians, and they held Shakespeare very highly. So when they were looking back into the 17th century and looking for writers to study and analyse, they zoomed in on Shakespeare. And so from there on, you have, of course, this is the 19th century. That's the same era where England started colonising the rest of the world. And so that is how, in many ways, you know, we come to this point, because we've come through that experience with England in that particular era when they thought that Shakespeare was everything. And so till today, we have that sense that, oh, Shakespeare is the greatest writer, even if half of us have never read him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to emphasize that point, that though he was put to serve an imperialist end, there was nothing inherently elitist or classist about Shakespeare himself. He was born actually into a humble family. I think his father was a tradesman and in a very class-conscious Britain. Yeah, and he was... his plays were written for the general public, really. I mean, anybody who had a penny, you know, could walk into the Globe and watch his plays perform. And the plays he wrote were enjoyed actually by the whole spectrum of society. In fact, he was a man of the people. I mean, if Shakespeare were alive today, he probably would be writing plays for TV, you know. But it was changing, as Sumi has mentioned, changing historical context that transformed Shakespeare from a man of popular theatre into a symbol of high culture, really, and who was deemed to be intellectually beyond the reach of masses. That was changing historical and political context. As Shakespeare moved from stage to the page, he was made to become part of the literary culture of the universities and schools.
Although, speaking more broadly, not just about Shakespeare, but about the classics in general, what is the process by which we can convert that into something that, you know, I'm not going to say youth, because there's no easier way to sound old and out of touch than to call people youth. But how do you get people to read the classics and to recognize them for, you know, in some cases, the action-packed thrillers that they are, you know, because I think there is a sort of worry about, maybe anxiety about language or about length when it comes to classics that really shouldn't be there. Because if you look at what Moby Dick is, you know, it's an action movie, just in a very long form, you know.
Action movie.
In some ways, it is. It's action movie, psychological thriller. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of things. But people feel distanced from it in some way. So as educators, how do you get people to find the classics exciting? Because they're often thought of as, I have to read this because it's for school, even among readers.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is going to sound odd coming from someone who's teaching in the university, but I would say, well, maybe start away from the books. There was a survey recently done, and amongst, you know, those in their 50s and above, the Shakespearean play they knew the best was A Midsummer Night's Dream. For those between 17 and 25, they knew Romeo and Juliet because of the movie that came out. And so maybe that's where we begin. We start not with the book, but we start with other media which people are familiar with. We start with movies. We start with live performances. We start with, you know, little competitions where people tweet something from Shakespeare. So you start from there, and then that starts breaking down the mental barrier that Shakespeare's uninteresting, I can't approach him. From there, then you get people interested in actually reading the text.
Is the inaccessibility of Shakespeare real, or is it something perceived?
I think it's very much perceived. And that's where Shakespeare's reputation actually works against him. Students come into my class all the time with the assumption that they're not going to understand Shakespeare.
It's going to be really hard.
Yes. And then once they get into the text, they discover that, oh, this is actually a lot of fun. And then you point out that, oh, there are these bits which are not very elite. They are, you know, sword fights. You've got some vulgar jokes, I'm afraid, along the way. And that just kind of does away with that mental block and allows them to enjoy the stories and eventually even to enjoy the language.
Yes, I want to talk a bit on the question of inaccessibility. There's inevitably going to be a level of difficulty reading Shakespeare because Shakespeare actually meant, he wrote in the language of the time, which was an early modern English, for the people of his time. And his plays were largely written to be in verse, as was the convention of the time, and they were largely written to be performed, to be heard. People in Elizabethan and Jacobean times were good listeners. I mean, it was a moral duty, obligation for them to attend Mass every weekend, and they were used to listening to long sermons. They were tremendous listeners. They were much better listeners than we are. So, you see, so we have the privilege of the written word. But the Elizabethans had the privilege of listening to the musical cadences, to the rhythms. Everything was in iambic pentameter, right? And to the sounds and the rhythms and the inherent musicality of Shakespeare's language. So, yes, there's the question of inaccessibility. But remember that even in his own times, there was a certain level of incomprehension that Shakespeare aimed at getting through his language, because he was trying to capture the moral confusion of his characters through the lines that they were speaking. It was intended, right? So, and of course, Shakespeare, it is true that Shakespeare has got more and more difficult to read with it, which
with the change in culture.
With each generation, I would say.
I suppose when we are
even
so focused on...
even with the English. Because, you know, this distracted generation does not want to have the patience to read him, to break him down into bits, to marvel, to chew and eat the delicious kernel. That they want everything now, instant gratification. But Shakespeare is to be digested and savored, because the multitudes of pleasures waiting for you when you break that code.
So it's not just a question of the difficulty of the language, but it's also the question of the length,
yes.
The question of our own attention span.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely so.
We are all interested in 124 characters or 120 characters,
yes.
And anything beyond,
yes,
that.
Yes, we want everything now and we want it in short form.
Which is fine. I mean, let's not be tough on the so-called young generation. This is the world we're living in. And so I would say, well, just let's bring Shakespeare across to the younger people in the way which they understand. If how people approach things these days is to have everything in bite-sized pieces, then we'll bring Shakespeare across in bite-sized pieces.
So when we talk about Shakespeare, what is essentially Shakespeare? Is Shakespeare the language, or is Shakespeare, yes, when you translate Shakespeare, is that still Shakespeare?
Yes, that is a difficult question, actually, because you remember, we do not remember Shakespeare for his plots, because many of his plots were borrowed from historical sources, and neither do we remember his plays for their props, because he wrote with minimal props. He used natural sunlight, he used a minimum of, minimum props, yeah? So it all goes down to the question of
language. Famous turns of phrase.
Yes, his turns.
It has to be in English, then.
Not necessarily. I think Shakespeare was able to do that with English because of his absolute mastery of the language. He knew that language was a tool with which we utter ourselves and our experiences. I'm not saying that others have not done it in English. There are others who have done it in English, and there are others who can do it in other languages. The thing is to master language and make it work for your purposes and to serve your users, which Shakespeare was able to do.
So when we say, okay, we're going to have school studying Shakespeare, what is the focus then? Is it understanding Shakespeare and his place in the context of themes? Or is it, you have to pay attention to the language? Like you say, since most of his plays are written in verse, in iambic pentameter, the students must understand iambic pentameter?
But I feel like that's a fundamental how do you study literature question. Because when you study literature, it is language, but it's also themes, and it's also history, and it's also context. In all fairness, I mean...
Yes, they all
this
come
is
together.
Not, yeah, it's not a Shakespearean problem. This is a literature, you know, a literature syllabus issue.
Absolutely,
as such.
Yes.
Yeah, because so for yourselves then, I mean, when you approach teaching Shakespeare, I mean, Dr. Cocky, you were talking earlier about how it's okay to go kind of, if it has to be piecemeal, it's okay for it to be piecemeal. If it has to be snappy, it's okay for it to be snappy. Professor, I get the sense that you would prefer that people kind of sit down with the full 5 hours.
No, I understand what Dr. Cock is saying, because she's talking about the realities on the ground. But I am saying that a more fundamental change has to come about in the mindsets of people. You know, because Shakespeare was already a historical figure for us. He was bequeathed to us by history. He is Malaysian already, whether you like it or not. He is Malaysian. But the thing is, there has to be the corresponding change in policies. As long as writings in English, and I don't only mean Shakespeare, as long as writings in English are not considered national literature, there will always be that...
distance.
That distance from literatures and writings in English. And people will feel this great apprehension, cultural estrangement from figures like Shakespeare.
To borrow Suning's phrase then, if you have carte blanche, if you are starting from scratch with our education system, with our English education in particular, all the way from primary school up to tertiary, where would you go with Shakespeare? Where would you want him to figure? How would you want it to be taught?
I'll start with what I wouldn't want. I have students coming in to me now who came from a particular period when literature was reintroduced into the English syllabus. And when it was first reintroduced into the English syllabus, Shakespeare was part of it. Basically, they studied one sonnet, they studied a speech from Macbeth. And so students come to me and say, oh, I know that poem, it's called Life's Brief Candle. And I say, it's not a poem, it's a speech from a larger play. You don't want that, because that misrepresents Shakespeare. So they come in saying, oh, no, I've done Shakespeare and I don't like him. He's boring, he just writes poetry about, you know, unimportant things.
About summer's days.
Correct, precisely.
But you see, I never had teachers like that. I had teachers who brought him alive. A lot of it has to do with the teachers.
That's right. So I think that's what we need. We need to bring Shakespeare across in a more lively way. Mm. Shakespeare wrote primarily plays. Let's deal with his plays. Yes, they are long, but we'll present them in portions. Bring them across, you know, maybe scene by scene. Introduce students to the plot, and then eventually drag them into the language and allow them to enjoy the complexities of the language. So I think you have to strike a balance somewhere of making things accessible for the students, at the same time not shortchanging them and giving them the impression that Shakespeare just wrote a few poems which are really not very interesting.
No, Shakespeare, as you said, Dr. Shamani, that he wrote for a performance, and it's not about reading in a classroom and analyzing the text. But yet that's how he's been approached,
yes,
for the most part. So what about performances by the students? What role will that play?
I think they are important. I wouldn't expect all students to be able to mount a full production, even professional struggle if something like that. In my class, for example, I get students to act out certain scenes. And as they are reading, I stop them and I say, okay, do you understand what you just said? And here's what it actually means. Now you act it out again. Or I get them to think about different ways in which they could deliver maybe two speeches. And that just gets them to start thinking a bit more deeply into that particular speech and to appreciate the depth of the language.
As a teacher, how often do you see people awaken to Shakespeare? You know, how often do you see people coming in and saying, I've done Shakespeare and I didn't like him? And you say, okay, no, let's sit down with this play and let's go through it again. And at the end of it, they find themselves enriched by the process, or they find themselves wanting to seek more Shakespeare. Does it happen?
It does, very often. 9 out of 10 times.
That's good to know. That is very good to know, actually.
No, I know. I find, for instance, using Shakespeare as a model of good writing, simply because how concrete his writing is. You know, we, for the most part, when we speak, when we write, it's all in generalities, and it's like we use all these qualitative words that nobody has. You don't get any kind of specificity about it. But I think he provides that kind of model.
He does. And he was also very attuned to the complexities of human character, of motivation, human impulses, acting in concert with the context of the time. Context, motivation, human impulse, and language all came together. And that is why we use him as that is why Shakespeare is important. It is important to read him in the original, but I don't see how that is going to be done in the current situation.
I don't know, Sunil. I mean, I don't quite agree with you on that. In fact, I every semester I tell my students, you're not supposed to write like Shakespeare.
No, I'm not saying write like in the sense of his language, but the way, everything that he talks about, he has a kind of being specific. He gives you the metaphors.
Yes.
Right.
I find that it's true. How a person uses language and the metaphors that the person comes up with, that's the original thinking of the person.
That is the inventive, and the creative.
And the individuality of the person in understanding the world.
Yes, you know. That's how he was able to use language for his purposes and to bring out his distinctive genius. That's a gift he's given us.
Now we come to the fact that there is a Shakespeare Refreshed Festival. What is the process of refreshing? I mean, Shakespeare festivals, regardless, they happen from time to time. What or how or why refreshed?
Well, they don't happen that often, not in the Klang Valley.
That's true. Yeah. In all fairness, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. No, actually, this is the only Shakespeare festival in a sense, right? I mean, where papers are being presented.
Organized by university.
Yeah.
So, Refresh, I think, is a play on words. We're thinking about, if you were to try and load a web page and you try and refresh the page because it's not quite loading, you're not quite getting what you want. So that's the idea of refreshing Shakespeare, I think, that a lot of people have a sense that, Shakespeare's out there. I know he exists. I can't quite get to him. My page isn't quite loading mentally. So let's try and refresh Shakespeare. We're going to bring Shakespeare across to the public in a variety of ways. So we've got a program full of some academic talks, some workshops which are not meant to be very academic. Mm. We've got live performances, we've got recitals, we've got a concert. And it's just really bringing Shakespeare in a way that's very lively and very accessible to anybody who's interested in Shakespeare at all.
So the academic talks are not at least couched in less academic terms.
No, they're not designed for academics at all.
They're not really academic, because that's why we're not having it in the university, but we're having it in a public mall, a space, right? In a more open space. And we have, in fact, people from, we have judges and lawyers, we have people from the arts world, we have people from... where else do we have people from? We have people like yourself in it, yeah?
Just to interrupt very quickly, someone's asking. At one time, there was some skepticism regarding the origin of his works. You know, it was thought of that the plays were not the work of a man, but were of a collective. Would you like to weigh in on age-old conspiracy theories about Shakespeare?
It is age-old. I would say that I personally believe it is by a man called Shakespeare. And for many people who can't accept it, perhaps it's because it's hard to imagine a single person coming up with so much, especially if that one person didn't even go to university. Maybe we have to be slightly less arrogant, accept the fact that, you know, Shakespeare isn't that elite, and it's not only the elite who can appreciate Shakespeare. So I know there are two camps on this. I'm on the camp that believe, yes, Shakespeare wrote the place.
In all fairness also, I think, you know, those were the days pre-television and pre-internet, and people had a lot more time on their hands in terms of productivity. I'm just saying. I'm just putting forth that idea.
Okay. Perhaps it doesn't matter whether it's a one production by one man or there are productions by several.
Yeah, that's true. Because, I mean, we are accepting these days that a lot of plays supposedly by Shakespeare may have been co-written by other people. That's okay. I don't think that's the main issue. The issue is about appreciating the plays for what they are.
To close off, who are you hoping to see at the festival? Who are you hoping will drop by?
Everybody.
All of Malaysia, I would say.
University Malaya has organised, as part of the 400th anniversary of the Bard's death, a Shakespeare Refreshed Festival, in which there will be, as mentioned, offerings of workshops, readings, talks, lectures, musical and dramatic performances. It's going to be held on Saturday, July 30th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. over at Publica. And that is it from us today. Ladies, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having us.
Together with Lim Sin Hing, I've been speaking with Professor Dr. Sharmini Gabriel, Head of Department of English at University Malaya, and Dr. Kok Soo Mei, Senior Lecturer at the same department at the same university, and we've been discussing Shakespeare as well as their upcoming festival today. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Shakespeare surrounds us. Shakespeare we're enormously familiar with, but the Shakespeare that we know and we don't know, and of course every day we're quoting Shakespeare but we don't know it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.